Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome one and all to the Karma Cafe Spiritual Hour. My name is James Bean, and on the line, Chandi Devi as well. Welcome.
Namaste.
Welcome. It's another Karma Cafe Spiritual Hour here on Blog Talk Radio. And we have a guest with us today, Regina Perlmutter, received her master's degree in social work at Rutgers University in 1974, studied meditation in India, and has also studied with healers and shamans all over the world. She is a certified hypnotherapist and a Reiki hands-on healing practitioner, as well as a handwriting analysis specialist. And on this webpage I'm looking at, it's a whole long list of things, from emotional freedom techniques to feng shui. Welcome to Karma Cafe Spiritual Hour.
Thank you.
Joining
Good
us
afternoon.
Today.
Greetings.
This afternoon, Regina is going to be talking about feng shui, which is the art of placement, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so yes, feng shui is a very, very powerful technique designed to bring the optimal flow of qi, which means universal life energy, into your home, which is really a microcosm of the universe and is really your space or your headquarters. And therefore, if your home is properly feng shuied, even if you were to go to another country or continent, that feng shui follows you wherever you go because your home is, in fact, your headquarters.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
And there are different schools of feng shui, right?
Yes, there are.
Which school do you work with?
Yeah, there are two schools. There's the Compass School, and then there is the Tibetan Black Hat Tantric Sect of Feng Shui. And I have studied with the Tibetan Black Hat School, which mm-hmm. I personally find much, much, much more fun and exciting.
Yeah.
I'm not a technical person, so I don't do well with compasses.
Yes.
My school emphasizes the visual. So, for instance, in your relationship corner, you would place something that to you represents happy relationships, such as two dolphins cavorting with one another or a couple romantically walking down the beach. It's all done through visual imagery. So each room is individually treated. Each corner, each wall represents a different aspect of the universe and the gifts it can bring you, and they are, and that we need to be happy, and they are fame or success. Fame not necessarily, you know, being a famous movie star, but having your name and your work get out there to the universe so people will know about you and will want to come for your services. Then there's the relationship corner, and that, like I said, has to do with bringing in a partner. Then there is the family or creativity wall, and the same wall for family is also for creativity is that your creativity is almost kind of like a child of yours that you give birth to. And then there's a corner for spiritual and book learning or knowledge, and then at the entrance is your mission in life, the entrance meaning the door to each room. And then there is the corner for helpful people. And helpful people is anybody in your life who helps you get through life more effectively. That could be your dentist, it could be your secretary, it could be your neighbor, your friend, your husband, your chiropractor, your boss, your coworkers, whoever they may be. And then there is the abundance corner or wealth corner, and that, of course, has to do with bringing in wealth. abundance. So that is known as the Bagua. The map that we transpose on each and every room is called the Bagua, which, according to ancient Chinese wisdom, represents the cosmos and the directions through which these gifts come to you. Now, feng shui is a very, very ancient art. It means wind, water. It has to do with harnessing the natural flow of energies that are in the universe and directing them into your home in a manner that optimally brings this qi or this energy into your space. So this was an art very much a part of ancient China. The Forbidden City and all the ancient temples of China were very much built according to feng shui. However, when the revolution came, I did not mention that the wealthy people used feng shui. The poor people were not permitted to use it. That is one of the ways the rich people kept control over the poor people or the poor masses.
Interesting.
By forbidding them. In fact, if someone attempted to use feng shui or teach it to the wrong person, that would have been cause for immediate punishment by death. And so when Mao Zedong took over, that was, of course, about getting rid of the wealthy ruling classes and having the people take over. When that happened, feng shui was associated with the evil ways of the ruling classes. So Mao Zedong then forbade feng shui. They kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater, and that became illegal for anybody, rich or poor alike, because it was associated with the evil ways of the old ruling classes. So then a feng shui master would lose his life by practicing it with anyone. However, in the most recent years, probably around the time acupuncture became popular again in the West, feng shui came with it. And if you may notice, we now see bamboos everywhere, right? Those green bamboo plants that you see everywhere. That is due to the popularity of feng shui. A lot of people don't even know what the bamboo represents, but it's just become a popular kind of fad item to have in your home. And also, you may all have noticed this huge proliferation of the fountain, right? And the fountain is a big, important item in feng shui because it represents the power of the flow of water. And so a fountain is a very optimal item to have in your home as well, usually as close as possible to the main entrance of the home or apartment or condominium or whatever your residence is. And why? Because the flow of water represents a powerful flow of qi. Or it could be at the entrance of any individual room as well. So everybody has noticed the proliferation of fountains and the bamboo, and feng shui has become very, very popular. There's a lot of big law firms here in L.A., in Century City, that have been feng shuied. There are numerous hotels that have been feng shuied. And those of you who are listening from L.A. may know about the Grove near the Fairfax District. That is a collection of theaters and restaurants and movies and so on. And that has all been feng shuied. And if you go there, I'm very sensitive to energy. I'm a psychic as well. I always know when I'm in a home that's been feng shuied. I once walked into a hotel in La Jolla, and I knew the minute I entered the lobby that it had been feng shuied. And I asked the people at the desk, and they said, "That's correct. Our feng shui master just finished feng shuying this hotel." So the way I know is that there's just this kind of cool stream or flow of energy that's very, very pleasant. It's kind of the opposite feeling of stagnation or stagnant, stuck energy. It's very subtle, but if you are sensitive to subtle energies, you can definitely make feel the difference. So when I feng shui a home, the first thing I do is I clear it energetically, which is not actually part of traditional feng shui. They never really taught that to me, but it was very obvious to me that the feng shui is such an important thing that you do to your home that you would want to also energetically clear it first. So when I am about to feng shui a home, I first of all energetically clear it. Now, what do I mean by that? In your home, there is a collection of all the thought forms, the energies, a memory that lingers from all the previous inhabitants going way back to when it was first built. Those of you listening, are there people listening from the East Coast?
John, all over the world.
All over the world. Okay.
Wherever the internet is, anyone can tune in.
Oh, okay. So those listeners who may be living in cities that are somewhat older, like if someone's listening from Rome or London or New York or whatever, your buildings tend to be much older than we have here in Los Angeles. And when I enter a home like that, I can literally feel layer after layer after layer after layer of the inhabitants. And I can literally tune in and tell you who has lived there and what happened in that home. Here in LA, our homes tend to be younger and newer, so it's not quite as multi-layered. But here, too, of course, we have layers. And it's, for instance, very, very common here in LA, you know, we have a high divorce rate, for a house to go up on for sale because there's a divorce happening. It's very, very common for a new couple to move in, and a year or 8 or 9 months later, there's that for sale sign again because they also are getting divorced. I have observed this happening over and over and over, maybe 8 or 9 or 10 times in the same home. Why? Because the acrimony, the tension, the negative energies that may have accumulated in that marriage continue to linger in that master bedroom, in that home. And ironically, the state of California even recognizes that there is such a thing as energy in a home because we have a law here that if a suicide happened in a house or someone has died of AIDS, those are the two circumstances, by law, the real estate agent must reveal that to any potential would-be buyer. So what we're saying basically is the state of California recognizes that there is such a thing as energy in a home. And indeed there is. But no matter what has happened in the home, for instance, if you move into a home where someone died of cancer and had a long, slow, painful death, or there was a divorce, or drugs were used, or alcohol, or whatever, or maybe even, you know, there was a drug ring that operated in that home. No matter what it is, it can be cleared. So the way I clear is I have a special technique where I use salt and I burn it with alcohol. You put it in a fireproof bowl in a way that the alcohol is just slightly above the salt line, and you make sure you use padding that's fireproof. Please don't try this without taking adequate precaution. And you throw a match in, and there will be this huge fire that is just simply amazing. Salt and alcohol are both tremendous purifying and sterilizing agents, and this fire is an amazingly effective technique, and I do this in every room or even the front yard or the backyard, and then I finally complete with sage, the cleansing with sage, which some of you may not know what sage is, but sage is an herb that grows, I think, pretty much all over the world, but it was used by the Native American Indians as a purifying and sanctifying herb. It was very, very important to them, and what you do is you burn it. If you go to my website, I gather sage at sacred mountains all over the world, and I ask each bush for permission before I gather it, and I have some very wonderful, wonderful sage, if anybody's listening. I guess.
Yeah, it is wonderful.
Oh,
I've
tried it.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Yeah.
What's your web address?
Yeah, my web address is www.light, L-I-G-H-T, on love. So that's onlove.com/healing and followed by a forward diagonal slash again. So light, www.lightonlove.com/healing/. So that's what I do before I even go into the home to feng shui, because there's no point in feng shuiing if this energy is, I always say you first have to clean your house, you know, to get it in order. You can't get a house in order that's dirty. Mm-hmm. Oh, and another very important thing I need to mention is clutter. Okay, another big contribution of feng shui to our popular culture is we now have 12-step programs for clutterers. Are you aware of that? Now, that didn't exist before feng shui. That's another contribution feng shui has made. So clutter is considered to be the enemy of feng shui. Why? Because clutter usually represents attachment to the past. It represents chaos. It represents fear of letting go of the past. So if you have a big, big pile of old magazines that you just can't seem to get rid of, it's usually, well, what is there, if there's something really important in one of those magazines, and if I throw this pile out, I will forever and ever miss out on this important piece of information that was in one of those magazines. That's usually what that represents. So it's fear. It's not trusting that the universe will send you exactly what you need to know whenever you need to know it. It's the opposite of trusting and being open to the flow. It's the energy of hoarding. Mm-hmm. It's the energy of attachment and the energy of chaos. So for those of you who may have a very cluttered, chaotic desk at work, you know the difference between trying to clear your mind and focus at such a desk versus a neat and orderly desk, which where you can rest your elbows, where you can find everything you need at your fingertips. You all would know the difference. And so it is with your home. The fact is, clutter is a constant reminder of you need to do this, you didn't do it. It's a constant source of guilt, anxiety, and chaotic energy in every home. So the first thing I do when someone calls me to do feng shui for their home or business, I explain this to them and I have them clear the clutter. Very, very, very important. And then I come in, I clear the home energetically. Then we feng shui, and this is the really my favorite part. At the very end, when everything has been feng shuied, I like to think that your home should be a temple. That's how I feel about one's home. Mm-hmm. I feel a home should be a place where you feel happy, content, safe, rejuvenated, refreshed. That's where you sleep. That's where you entertain your friends. Your home is a very, very important place. So at the very end, I invite the angels and all spirits of light and love to come and dwell there. And I always kind of like to say, I like the biggest challenges. Give me the biggest challenge, and I will make it feel like a temple at the end. And that is indeed what I do. Because energy can always, always be cleared and uplifted. And it's a known fact that lower vibrational energies or astral beings will come into your home uninvited, uninvoked, but the beings of light need to be invited. Why? Because angels, masters, beings of light are polite. They come when you invite them. So in the preliminary clearing, I clear any entities, negative spirits that may have accumulated there. And by the way, this may go back to the original land on which the home or dwelling is built. I recently did a home that was built in a gated community that had been Indian land. It had been literally built on ancient Indian burial grounds. Ooh. Not that those are negative spirits, but those spirits were very, very much not in peace. They were very disturbed. They had not made their transition. And there were some spirits there that were overtly aggressive and angry and feeling very violated by these people who had come and, first of all, thrown them out of their home, but also then built residences on their very sacred land. So that can happen as well. And the clearing goes back to the very, 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 very first original inhabitants. And it's all cleared. All of it is cleared. Anything that doesn't belong there anymore gets sent to the light. In the case of the Indians, I apologize on the behalf of all the people who had harmed them and violated them. And then I called in angels. This is another thing I do. I called in angels and asked them to escort all these restless spirits and take them to their next part of their journey, which is back to the light, so they can be free to continue with their journey. And the way to do that is with an entity that doesn't want to go, you explain to them that they're stuck. You explain to them that they need to move on. You explain to them that the angels will escort them, that it's safe, that they will find a profound peace and love on the other side. And I do the same work when it's very common if someone has died and the widow or widower of the these person can, or family member or loved one continues to grieve and mourn and remains attached to them. Very common for that spirit to still hang around, sometimes years and years and years after their death. And I do the same work in those cases. I encourage the person who's still grieving to finally let them go with love and with peace, and reassure the deceased spirit that they will be okay and that they will be able to take care of themselves. This, of course, can only happen after sometimes working with that person for a while. And I have assisted in many, many instances of helping the deceased spirit to move on and make its next transition. So, let's see. What else should I talk about?
Well, could you mention some of the tools that you use for clearing?
Yes.
In feng shui, such as like a mirror?
The mirror?
Yes, such as.
Okay. So in feng shui, when we have some problem areas in your life, like money isn't happening or a relationship isn't happening, or there is a structural problem in the house, for instance, if you have a home where when you first enter there's a big wall, that is literally represents a brick wall of obstruction in your life, because the chi enters through by the way, the mouth of the home is always the front door. Even if you go in through the garage or whatever, the front door, the main entrance is the mouth of the home. That's where the chi enters, even if you use a back door entrance. So let's say it was built in a way. Oh, let me just mention that throughout Asia, nobody buys a home unless they bring the feng shui master with them. And in fact, because we've had so many Asians coming to LA, it's very common that our real estate people here have taken classes or connected with the feng shui master, because everybody knows that the Asians are very, very concerned about feng shui of a home before they will even consider purchasing it. So let's say you open the front door and there's a brick wall is the first thing you see, or a staircase going upstairs. Those are what is considered a flaw or something that needs correction. In other words, the chi enters the mouth of the dwelling and hits a brick wall, and from there it just kind of stays stuck and cannot flow to the rest of the dwelling. So what we do is we use a mirror, and we program the mirror with everything in feng shui is done with the sacred Buddhist mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum. And we therefore energize that mirror. And remember, a mirror is made of the same molecules and atoms that the rest of the cosmos is made of. And we command with intention that the chi enter this home and then goes to the mirror, which has the power to reflect, and then bounces the chi in the direction that we want it to go into. Now, feng shui is so commonly used in Asia that in places like Hong Kong, if a big company or business is about to go bankrupt, and by the way, in Hong Kong, big, huge banks, IBM, Apple Computers, they all are in office suites that are feng shuied. And furthermore, if somebody in, you can also use feng shui to weaken your opponent. Let's say there's two banks across from the street from each other in Hong Kong. And so one bank will, you can also use mirrors to deflect the chi of your competitor or business rival. It is quite common in Hong Kong if that is done. They take each other to court, and the judge orders the offending party to remove their offensive feng shui. That's quite common. Now, another interesting thing I'd like to mention at this point is when Hong Kong was taken over by the Chinese, remember I said the Chinese had this tremendous hostility towards feng shui after the revolution in 1948. When the Chinese took over, Hong Kong is an optimal place for feng shui because it is an island that has an ongoing flow of water surrounding it. And same thing with Manhattan, New York. Manhattan is an island surrounded by two big rivers, the Hudson and the, actually I can't remember the other name of the river, but anyways. This is very, very, very powerful optimal feng shui. So no wonder Manhattan is considered the Big Apple, the core of everything that's happening, some say even of the planet. It is the commercial center of the United States. It's the fashion center of the United States. And some people say the art capital of the world. It used to be Paris. Some people say it is now New York. Why? Because New York is such a vibrant, such a live city, and I used to live in New Jersey, and I used to take a bus into Manhattan, and there used to be this big tunnel, and the minute the bus would go through the tunnel and emerge on the other side in Manhattan, I instantly felt this famous flow of energy or adrenaline that people talk about that you feel in Manhattan. I just feel it's one of the most exciting, vibrant cities in the whole world. Why? Because of the feng shui. So Hong Kong had a similar flow going on, and as a result, it was also the center of commerce and economy of all of Asia. Now, when the Chinese took over, they, again, remember they had this hostility towards feng shui, and they said, look at all this flowing water. Let's build some dams and use it to create electricity. So the feng shui community went to them and pleaded with them, no, because a dam is the equivalent of blocking this flow of qi or energy. And they pleaded with them, no. And the Chinese said, bah, humbug, what a bunch of nonsense, what a bunch of superstition. And they went and built their dams, and guess what happened? The economy of Asia has never quite recovered. If you recall, you may remember that Japan has been struggling for a while, and if you follow the Asian economy, you will see that that's precisely when the economy took a significant downturn. So that is the power of feng shui. Is there anything else? Should I talk about animal communication?
Sure.
Okay, unless there's any questions about feng shui.
James?
No, I found that all quite fascinating.
Isn't it? Yeah.
I found it to be, it's interesting how it is recognized as part of law in some places. I found that
mm-hmm.
quite intriguing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Donald Trump also uses feng shui, doesn't he?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, feng shui can make a huge difference in your life. I've helped several people get find their soulmate after feng shuiing their homes, and many people have had a huge immediate improvement in their finances, as well as health. Oh, I didn't mention health, of course, is a very important aspect
mm-hmm.
of feng shui, and that is refers to the center of each room, where we do some installations that are kind of too lengthy to go into, but we also program for health and vitality, wealth, success, love, harmonious relationships. Everything you need to lead a happy life is included in feng shui. So if anybody wants to call me, I'll give you my number. I'm in Los Angeles. My number is 818-609-0532. That's 818-609-0532. So now I am also, in addition to being a healer, I am also a psychic and an animal communicator. Should I talk about that?
Yes, that sounds fun.
Do you think people are interested in that?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Pets are central, and I was reading somewhere recently that people that own their own pets
mm-hmm.
live several years longer. I was actually quite surprised at the age. You know, it's you know, better than giving up bacon and smoking, it seems. You know,
really?
Owning a pet is a very important thing.
Uh-huh. Well, I definitely can see why. My little doggie's curled on my lap as we speak. And for anyone who's had a pet, you know the love, the comfort, the companionship, the richness they give to your life. So I became an animal communicator about 10 years ago when it was still virtually unheard of. In fact, when it first happened, the way it happened is my beloved dog at the time, her name was Anastasia. Was a 5-pound Pomeranian, one day just kind of looked at me, and I began to receive these strong, strong psychic impressions as if she were speaking to me. And animal communication was so rare at that time that I thought, what? I don't even think I've ever heard of animal communication at that point. And I didn't even trust or believe it at that point. So I undertook a series of experiments to always, you know, I do have a master's degree from a university. I want to know scientific data before I go for any theories or new ideas. I did a series of experiments involving my boyfriend, who would take Anastasia for a walk. And when they'd come back, I would say to Anastasia, which route did you take and what happened on your walk? And Anastasia would go into a lengthy description, letting me know which route they took and what kind of dogs they encountered on the walk and what happened and interesting adventures she had on their walk. And I would test this over and over again with the boyfriend, and over again he would verify that this is indeed exactly what happened. I'll tell you a funny, amusing story about Anastasia. I once had to leave town and left her with a friend of mine to dog sit her. And Anastasia was not an easy dog. Anastasia was what they call a yapper. Very high strung. Pomeranians are often very high strung.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of being that if a helicopter would literally fly overhead, she would get hysterical and bark at this huge sky with this helicopter hovering. And the same for airplanes and leaves falling and you name it, would get her all excited. So she was not an easy dog. I loved her so much that she could do no wrong. And you just kind of get used to these little eccentricities that every single pet has their own eccentricities, just like we humans do. And so I was quite used to it, but some other people had quite a hard time with it. So I go to pick her up, and it was very obvious that Anastasia was very eager to get out of there. And she virtually said, "Get me out of here. I want to go home," because I wanted to sit and chat with my friend, the dog sitter. But Anastasia said, "I want to leave. Get me out. Get me out." So we left, and I put her in the car. And as we're driving home, I said, "Why did you want to leave? Was your stay not fun?" And she said, "It was so horrible. Your friend was not nice to me at all. She yelled at me." And she acted like I was an imposition, and I felt very unwelcome and unloved in that home. And she also said that the friend yelled at her and made her feel very, very unwelcome.
Mm-hmm.
So that night, I go to a party, and the friend is at the party. So I mentioned to the friend, "Did you have a difficult time with the dog?" And she said, "Well, actually, yes." I said, "Did you feel like she was an imposition?" And she said, "Well, frankly, yes, I did."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Did you yell at the dog?" And at this point, her eyes are huge. And she goes, "Yes? How do you know this?" And I said, "The dog told me." So that's the kind of adventures you can have with your animals once you begin to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize that they are as conscious and aware and particularly sensitive to feeling unwanted as we are when we feel hurt or rejected by someone.
Mm-hmm.
They have very complex emotions. They have ideas. They have desires. They like certain people a lot, and they may not be that fond of some other people, just
yeah.
like us. They're amazingly complex creatures, and when you do begin to communicate with an animal, I just want to mention that the bond is so incredibly close, and when Anastasia's time came to make her transition, it was a very, very difficult, painful transition for me. But that was particularly difficult, I feel, because when you have an animal that communicates with you, it's truly like a family member. They become truly like one of your closest and best friends. And so the bond you make with your animal after this communication happens can be so close that that it's just like a human. A very close relationship with a human.
Yes, my sister does some animal communication as well, and she helps people, you know, in Europe find their missing dogs, and she's in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting because she will just sit and meditate, and she'll communicate with the animal, and they'll tell her exactly where they are.
Wow.
Now, she's never been there, and she'll say, "Well, there's a building there, and you turn right, there's the rock wall or whatever." And then the
wow.
owners would say, "Well, yeah, I know where that is." They'd go there and they would find their dog.
Mm-hmm.
And this
wow.
happens over and over. So there is definitely, you know, a connection with animals. And I think, you know, it would do us all so well if we just listen to them and listen
Absolutely.
To them with our hearts.
Absolutely. See, there's nothing really strange about communicating with an animal. They're part of us. They're part of nature. It's only that we have become so separated from Mother Earth and from nature and from each other that we forgot that they are just as complicated in many cases as we are and have feelings and are capable of tremendous love, just like we are. And it is due to our separation from nature that we forgot. It's really quite natural to talk to your animals.
Yes, I can read my golden retriever's mind. You know, they're so expressive. You just know exactly what they're asking for.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. She likes to do that EFT as well. You do EFT, right?
Mm-hmm. Emotional Freedom Technique.
Yes. That's great. We just had a guest, Brad Yates, was on. Was it last week?
Last week.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and he gave a demonstration of it. And it's
Chandra, hold on one second. Please keep talking. I'll be right back.
Okay. Yes,
yeah, that was a great show last week on tapping the emotional freedom techniques, EMT.
Hello, I'm sorry about that.
Go ahead.
Okay, so where were we?
And, well, we were just mentioning that you also did emotional freedom. But
yes.
I see you also do tarot and psychic readings.
Right, and I do past life regressions. I've done thousands of past life regressions. Maybe I should talk about that a little bit, should I?
How do you do that? Is it through
hypnosis? I do it through hypnosis.
Okay.
At this point, I really see people's lives quite easily or my own whenever I need to, but I always like to have the clients see it themselves because it becomes much more real if they experience it rather than just hearing some strange story from the psychic. And why do we do past life regressions? We do it because very, very often the source of our issue in this life, whether it be an ongoing acrimony with a child or a husband or a neighbor or a friend or a difficulty or a pattern, whatever it is, the patterns that we may have, very, very often those patterns are really can be found, the source of them can be found in a past life. And very, very, or phobias such as fear of heights or water or fire or a lot of us have kind of strange issues with different parts of our body, like the throat is a common one, or unexplained strange chronic pains in maybe a breast or a shoulder or whatever, and for which there's no medical explanation. Very often, if you go to another life, you will see often an interior trauma occurred with that particular part of the body, and especially relationships or patterns you're having. For instance, very common to have issues with money, right? Issues with bringing more abundance into our lives, or issues with struggling all the time, or issues with our creativity or our talents not getting honored or recognized in the world. And often going back to another lifetime, which is the source of that pattern, often reveals, you know, perhaps a misuse of one's power or creativity. And going back to that life gives you an opportunity to forgive yourself or forgive that other person for having done something to you. And very often the pattern or the issue miraculously dissolves. It just, there's no need to carry it anymore because the forgiveness work has been done. The knot has become unloosened and dissolved by simply often just going back and seeing what happened in the past to give rise to the pattern that is manifesting today.
And so, how many sessions does it take how many sessions do you normally have to go to get to the core issue?
Okay, very often it happens in 1 hour session. It happens actually quite easily. It's quite effortless. Often the first time someone has it done, they're maybe a little nervous or scared. But after a while, you really become quite blasé. I don't know if that's the word. You get quite accustomed to it. It's really no big issue for me whatsoever to go back to a past life. It's sort of just remembering what happened. It's kind of like, where did I put my keys? Oh, gee, oh, yeah, I left them in the kitchen, and you go to the kitchen and retrieve your keys. It's sort of remembering. It's just remembering. And all the feelings do come up. There can be a lot of tears. There could be a lot of terror sometimes. If you, for instance, remember that you were tortured, or perhaps you tortured someone else, which, you know, I just want to remind our listeners that if you go through the history books and you read all the different phases of human history, you know, Genghis Khan and various invasions and the slaughtering of the native populations of North and South America, we did that. We were the victims and we were the perpetrators. So when you open a history book, that who did all that? That was us. In mm-hmm. another incarnation, when we didn't have the awareness or the consciousness or the compassion that we do now, and or the evolution, and which we thankfully, hopefully, have now. Because why? Because we also were the victims, and we have learned compassion. So, we have been the perpetrators and the victims. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, hundreds and thousands and maybe millions of lifetimes. And if anything is showing up in this life that just continues to persist and you can't seem to get rid of it, it's very frequently a past life issue. And it's quite easy. I do it through hypnosis. Within 5 minutes, the person is seeing their past life.
Do they have to be there, or can you do it long distance?
I do it long distance, yes. Hypnosis works beautifully over the phone.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And I just want to mention another healing technique that I'm very, very excited about.
Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned, I have traveled the world literally studying with shamans and teachers and masters because it's my passion. It's my greatest mission and passion in this lifetime. To heal body, mind, and spirit. And I've been to Bali, I've been to Egypt, I've been to India, I've been to Israel, I've been in lots and lots of Brazil, throughout South America, studying with masters of all kinds. And I can honestly say that the most exciting technique that has come along in my entire life is a technique called theta healing. Have you heard of it, Chandi?
I believe I have.
Theta.
Yes.
Theta, which refers to a deep state of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very deep state where your brainwaves slow down. And the theta healer puts himself into that state, which I can do in 1 second, which is easily learned.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally go to the consciousness of what we call Creator. We call God Creator because so many people have issues with the word God. Because the fact is many of us have been traumatized quite severely by the various organized religions of our birth that we were indoctrinated into. So, some people, if you say God to them, they literally begin to cry. They have so much pain around that, or animosity, or upset, or charge. So we use the word creator, and when we go there, this is not the God of the Bible who punishes and thinks you're evil and a sinner and all that stuff. This is the source of all that is, who is way, way beyond that duality or dualistic thinking. And this has created the source of all that is. And we go there, and from that perspective, when you go there, it's just this infinite, amazing, amazing, infinitely powerful, infinitely ecstatic source of light is what it is. And that is above the field of duality of good and bad and right and wrong, who does not judge. It's, and you really see that we're the ones who are judging ourselves, and we're the ones who sentence ourselves to all this guilt and shame that in turn repels from us the prosperity we're seeking, the fulfillment, the happiness, the love, everything that we want in life. Who's repelling that? We're repelling it. But a long time ago, humanity projected that onto God, that God is punishing me, God is withholding this from me, And that's where all the organized religions came out of that kind of projection. So we then go to Creator, and when you go there, you realize that Creator has literally been waiting for humanity to wake up and use him for healing, that he's just been waiting for this technique and this access to evolve. And when we're connected in that state of consciousness, we use a command such as, Creator, it is commanded that you heal this person's cancer, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, command is from the Latin word, which means to harness or redirect energy, because a lot of people have this kind of knee-jerk reaction, well, who am I to tell God what to do? And the fact is, God is just waiting for us to utilize his vast, infinite power to heal ourselves, because he loves us. He wants us to be healed from our self-created diseases. So with this technique, I have been able to heal two cases of skin cancer, one case of very, very chronic liver disease where the patient was dying. She had lost about 60 pounds. Her liver simply stopped being able to process anything, any food, and she couldn't eat. And for 2 years, she went to every doctor, every homeopath, every Chinese acupuncturist, and nothing worked. And she was also in physical agony. And in 3 sessions, the pain completely was gone. And in 10 sessions, the condition had become completely reversed. She gained her weight back, and she was absolutely fine and radiant once more. I need to mention that Theta addresses the underlying emotional issue that gives rise to each and every dis-ease that we manifest. Now, some people may say, well, you know, some diseases are in my DNA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my grandmother had diabetes, my mother had diabetes or heart disease or whatever. And yes, that's true. Your DNA holds a memory and a record of everything that has happened to all of your ancestors, including all their issues, their thoughts, their beliefs, which have created their reality. So very often if we have an issue with struggle or scarcity consciousness, not only are we thinking negative beliefs and thoughts that are creating this pattern, but we may have very well have had ancestors that died in the various epidemics, droughts, plagues throughout Europe, which, you know, there was a lot of that going on until modern history, when we have learned to prevent that with pesticides and modern techniques. I just want to mention, in the old days, if a farmer's crops didn't thrive one season, there was no federal subsidy for that farmer. They would simply starve to death and have to watch the whole family starve to death. And that has happened to a lot of our ancestors. Most of us are from Eastern Europe, or rather Europe. And that's what used to happen in Europe before modern farming techniques were created, before federal subsidies were created to help the failing farmer. So,
I want to ask you, if the Theta healing, is that Vianna?
That's right. Vianna is a woman. Yes.
Okay,
who started
yes.
It.
Mm-hmm. Right. Then I am familiar with that. It is great.
It's phenomenal. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Vianna's a woman in Idaho who, 15 years ago, she was a single mother struggling to support 3 children, small children, and she had a factory job, and one day she got out of bed, and she had this shooting, agonizing pain in her leg, and she just hobbled off to work and ignored it, and she couldn't even afford to see a doctor, and she kept hobbling and limping off to work, and the pain got worse and worse. And finally, her friends insisted that she go see a doctor. And when she did, the doctor told her that she has a very, very serious aggressive form of cancer, a very unusual form, in this leg, and that the most they could do was amputate the leg in the hopes of prolonging her life by maybe a month or two.
Oh.
And they basically told her they could do nothing for her,
mm-hmm.
and that she was to find a home for her three children. So the idea of leaving her children orphaned because they had no father was so distressing to Vianna that she would get on her knees and just cry and cry and beg God to heal her. And she kind of made a deal with God that if you let me live, I'll go as soon as they're 18, and I don't mind leaving, but just please, please, don't let me leave these children as orphans.
Mm-hmm.
So it was at this time that she channeled this technique. Creator gave her this technique, and she healed herself 100%, and she's alive and well 15 years later. Her leg is completely normal, and the doctors were completely baffled and had no explanation for this perfect, complete healing.
That's
Vianna is now spreading this work, and I'm very, very honored to be part of this technique, and I'm so excited and passionate about it, and it works great in groups as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm also available to do group presentations for groups, and it works great over the phone.
Mm-hmm.
So let me give my phone number again. It's 818-609-0532, 818-609-0532.
And your website is lightonlove.com/healing.
And again, / at the end. And be sure to type in www. Dot at the beginning. Uh-huh.
Well, Regina, this has been just fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
We covered a lot of ground, and you're so versatile in all your healing and all the different methods that you have mastered.
Yeah, I'm a good example of what we call an older soul.
Mm-hmm.
An older soul, you know, gathers moss, and they have been, you know, adept. I was a healer in the ancient days of Egypt and in Atlantis and all that. And it's just kind of, it just comes back. It just seems so natural.
Mm.
So I'm an example of an older soul. We have usually, it's very common for us to have a lot of different skills and techniques.
Well, that's great. That's wonderful. And you're in Encino, California.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. James, are we out of time? Or
we're down to our last minute.
Oh, we are? Oh, okay.
That was good that our guest today gave out her phone number and website, so listeners can learn more. And we should give out our email addresses and things. Well, we can for everyone today.
Okay. Thank you both of you for inviting me on your show. It was a delight to spend this hour with you.
Oh, thank you so much.
And,
we enjoyed it thoroughly.
Thank you. And my email address is lotus, like the flower, LOTUS, 108 at S as in Sam, B as in boy, C as in cup, sbcglobal.net. Lotus108 at sbcglobal.net.
Great.
A very Indian address.
That's right. I could go on and on about the lotus, but we don't have time. What the lotus represents.
We'll do that next time.
That number 108 is also very important in India.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. It's a sacred number.
Right, absolutely.
Yes, indeed.
All right.
Thanks for joining us today on the Karma Cafe Spiritual Hour.
Thank you so much, and namaste.
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 Take care.
Chandi Devi, what's your email address?
Chandi at karmacafe.com. That's C-H-A-N-D-I at karma, K-A-R-M-A.
Love Talk Radio.
Cafe, C-A-F-F-E.com.
Yes, my address is james@spiritualawakeningradio.com.
All right, thanks for being with us. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Okay, namaste.
Yep. Bye-bye.